We're ready to start paper 16, which is on old single column, page 184. All right, so last week we finished up the five papers on cosmology. You know, the third of the sort of quote-unquote Pentateuchs. That they begin the revelation with. Now we've got the next little block of papers here is the next two papers on supreme spirits. So, like I was mentioning here, the last couple times, they did those three Pentateuchs. They sort of laid all of the basic groundwork with that threefold beginning like that. And now they're ready to start to delve into the details more. And initially, an awful lot of the details are the basic beings that are necessary in order to personality manage. Remember, the universe is mind made and personality managed. That personality management line, it all sounds so easy when you just let it roll off your tongue, personality managed, but it's a huge task to manage something even the size of the grand universe and the central universe. It doesn't just happen automatically that 7 trillion inhabited worlds can be established and maintained, and a whole complex process of fostering those mortal origin creatures all the way up to paradise, I mean, can be established and maintained. I mean, that doesn't just happen without a lot of detailed planning and management. And just those thoughts is pretty revolutionary in terms of the history of thinking about the cosmos, because so much of our thinking about God has been magical. The more magical you make that thinking, the less you need anyone except some singular magic being to do everything. But we know that first source and center of all things and beings delegated absolutely everything that was delegatable. And so remind yourself of who's delegating. That's an infinite person. If an infinite person starts delegating, they could do a lot of delegating and not run out of the potential to delegate. Okay, you can delegate an infinite amount of stuff and you'd still be an infinite being. Okay. So, not surprisingly, there are a lot of beings. Just for them to reveal the basic structure of the master universe and the basic nature of our ascension scheme, or of the ascension scheme, of our ability to ascend, requires, when you total it all up, a number of beings that's beyond our numerical concept. Okay. And like they say so many times, and you have no idea of how many beings we're not revealing. Okay, just the categories of beings that we're not revealing, let alone how many beings might actually be in some of those categories. Okay. So it's a very, very vast, complex universe. But because there are three infinite persons at the center of that whole phenomenon, that vast complexity, numbers beyond our numerical concept, is not any problem for those three infinite persons. They can encompass an infinite number of details without any strain at all. They are, way more than the ultimate multitaskers. So we're going to jump in, start engaging this. And for those of you who, have been reading for years, you know that there's a definite tendency in general for it to be top down. Since we started with the three infinite persons, we're going to work our way down in many ways. They can't do that in a simplistic fashion, but it kind of has that basic character as we go through the ensuing papers here now. And with these first two of this, in this mode, the Supreme Spirits, the seven Master Spirits are amongst the Supreme Spirits. But because they are, so important as the overarching being for each of the seven super universes, they devote a whole paper, to them rather than just the section that the others get in the next paper, so that you can really get a firm grip on in many ways, what's the nature of those beings that are the primary overseers of what you're up to these days. All of that main oversight was delegated. The Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit are not, involved in all the micromanagement details of the administration and whatnot of the super universes. The Master Spirits are on top of that whole complicated picture for each of the seven super universes, which, we've been just talking about how vast the super universe is in many different ways. So let that sink in. Something that big and complex, there's one being who can wrap their mind around all of that simultaneously. A Master Spirit is a pretty profound being. And you'll start to see that as we get into this a little ways. I'll try to emphasize the way they're pointing out to not just think of them as, they're one of those, all those different beings that they talk about. They get their own paper, see? And they're very vast beings, and they are master spirits. That using that word master, like Master Universe, is just in their name. That's telling you that they're beings on a very vast scale, much more than grand. Very vast beings. Obviously, since the four outer space levels aren't even populated yet, or let alone developed yet physically, they have vastly more unmanifested potential than they have, actual expression right now. They are huge reservoirs of potential over control that no one has any concept of. No revelator has any idea just what might lie, not yet revealed inside such a vast being as they begin to relate to the absinthe age and the outer space levels. All right, so that should give us a good little start. Let's get into it and see some of the details.
Paper 16, the seven master spirits. The seven master spirits of paradise are the primary personalities of the infinite spirit. In this sevenfold creative act of self-duplication, the infinite spirit exhausted the associative possibilities mathematically inherent in the factual existence of the three persons of deity. Had it been possible to produce a larger number of master spirits, they would have been created. But there are just seven associative possibilities, and only seven, inherent in three deities. And this explains why the universe is operated in seven grand divisions, and why the number seven is basically fundamental in its organization and administration.
Okay, a couple things. Notice how they very purposely used deity there. Even when they were talking about the persons, they described them as the three persons of deity. You know, and then later on, inherent in three deities. So that should give you a clue, since we've talked about this so much, that when you get to the next paragraph, you know, we know about those seven different associative possibilities. You know, be thinking deity more than person. Okay? And we'll talk about that a little more in the next paragraph. The other thing is just the seven. I think I may have mentioned this before, back when we were talking about the sacred spheres of paradise. You know, seven worlds of the Father, seven worlds of the Son, seven worlds of the infinite Spirit. That sevenfold pattern is this sevenfold pattern. You know, when we get to talking about the master spirits separately, you'll see that very explicitly. You know, that it's the same seven. You have seven supreme executives on the seven worlds of the infinite Spirit that are the executives of these master spirits. You know, it's a very tight parallel. It's the same seven. And that sevenfoldness, you have a fundamental unity that is embodied in the infinite Spirit. Yeah, Spirit's the unity. If they're talking about a substance, you know, the unity substance that expresses unity directly. Spirit, unity. You have an inherent unity at a very high level, at the lowest, at an absolute level. When we talk about the third source and center, and we'll talk about the absolute mind, you know, the conjoint actor being the absolute mind, and you know, here is the infinite Spirit, and we've mentioned that when you get into the details of the creative Mother Spirit, that's the co-infinite upholder. See, so you have those very high levels of absolute, co-infinite above that, infinite above that. Okay. So the third source and center has staked out that whole territory. But what about below? What if you take the unity that's sort of at that the bottom of that domain, you know, that the third source and center is in directly has his hands around, and you downstep it? What happens is, when you go sub-absolute, you get this sevenfold individuation of that spirit unity. You have this fundamental sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. You had a threefold individuation of deity unity, they're just alluding to, you know, the three deity, primary, you know, persons of deity. Now we're taking it down a notch to a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. So like we were talking about just recently, with the seven super universes, that top, you know, that it's a three-level structure, the top level is the unity level, you know, that flavor of unity is one of these facets of the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. So when you talk about unity tied to the concept of spirit, it is expressible in seven fundamental modes. Yeah, so that's what we're dealing with, is that sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. And in terms of the beings, these seven master spirits, like I was pointing out there, you want to think very much in deity terms. Oh, well, we're going to think in deity terms, and we know they're persons. Personalized deity is God. Right. Okay. So you know we're going to be talking about God here. Okay, master spirits are God. They're personalized deity. All right, so let's read that next little one.
The seven master spirits thus have their origin in and derive their individual characteristics from the following seven likenesses. 1, the Universal Father. 2, the Eternal Son. 3, the Infinite Spirit. 4, the Father and the Son. 5, the Father and the Spirit. 6, the Son and the Spirit. 7, the Father, Son, and Spirit.
Okay, so notice how they, like we've mentioned so many times, they construct the revelation to start with the individuality viewpoint, you know, and then to slowly encourage you to bring in the deity viewpoint as much as you can, you know, at least when you're initially trying to engage it. Notice how they just did that right there. Like we were saying, you know, it's not sort of so much the person, the Universal Father, but the deity flavor that you want to think of as feeding into these different associations. So you have the Father type deity, the Son type deity, and the Spirit type deity. You know, and if as a way of getting you into that, obviously using the names Universal Father, Eternal Son, Infinite Spirit, say rather than conjoint actor. I mean, the deity flavor names are right there in those individuality names, those names of those individuals. So it's a nice little intermediate step to use those names. What you want to think, so you have those three types of deity, the Father, the Son, the Spirit, and you're going to have seven different sub-absolute expressions. So the first one, that's just the Father, that's not the Father as an absolute expression of that type of deity. This is dropping it down a notch below the absolute. The Universal Father is the Havona Father, as the absolute Father. But we're talking about sub-absolute.
What do you call the absolute? What is the name for the absolute level then? You say we're sub-absolute, so what do you call the Father at the absolute level?
Like I said, you could just call him the absolute Father. But it's the Universal Father. When you say the Havona Father, you know, you're talking about an absolute footprint of the Universal Father. You know, as an infinite person, okay, the infinite person is not going to fit into the central universe. But the absolute footprint of the Father can fit into the central universe. Now we're taking it down another notch.
But it's the same spirit. It's the same person.
Right. It's
that gets too confusing if you start confusing.
Well, but it has to be confusing. That's the whole point. It can't be simple. The fifth epical revelation is trying to get us to understand that if you want to really understand the universe, it can't be simple anymore. You have the person, and the only place that person literally is, the Universal Father, as an infinite person, is at the center of the Isle of Paradise. That's the only place that person is.
As an infinite person.
Yeah, as that infinite person. Okay? But that person acts in sub-infinite ways. It's like, well, that's confusing. How can I have an individual here and an individual there? Yeah, see, that's the whole point. That's why the first section of the foreword is not God. The first section is deity. You've got to have that concept of deity first. Because if you recognize that before the Father is a person, the Father is deity. A type of deity we call the Father. And when we personalize that deity, it's God, the Father. But when we just think about the deity, we have this deity called the Father. And deity, what's the fundamental quality of deity? Unity. When I say unity,
unity,
yeah. When I say unity, does that sound like something that's really localized and only can be found at one tiny little spot? No, I mean, that word just immediately invokes some kind of ubiquity, some kind of being spread over a vast area. All right, the Father-type deity is everywhere, okay? you know, it extends to the boundaries of the infinite capacity, that deity. But you can't go anywhere and say hi to the person, the personality that's identified with that deity. And not only that, but you can't go anywhere and say hi to the infinite footprint of that identification, you know, or the absolute, or, I mean, you have the deity everywhere. And the question is, when you go to a certain place, like you go to the central universe, not on the aisle, but just to the central universe, and you experience the personality of the Father, you're experiencing something that's not exactly the same as what's at the center of the aisle. But now you're not going to notice that. I mean, are we super absolute beings? Are you going to notice the difference between infinite and absolute? No, we're completely clueless of the difference. I mean, we, you know, actually, and as we, when we try to extend our consciousness to actually experience the Universal Father, the biggest we could hope to stretch our mind and that and make that engagement is to the supremacy. Well, the Supreme Father is that the Universal Father?
No.
That's the Supreme Being. I mean, you know, see, you know, when you think about the individual, there's a sense in which the individual is downstep too. You know, if you take that individuation that we call the Universal Father, there's a downstepped expression of that. It's a separate person called the Supreme Being. The Universal Father delegated that. He doesn't possess Supreme Fatherness. He delegated that. That's all in the Supreme Being. Yeah. There's only certain things that he didn't delegate. He didn't delegate his infinite person. Right? He didn't delegate his absolute person expression that needs to engage Havona. It needs to initiate Havona. Because Havona is the pattern for everything. He can't delegate that or nothing can get started. He has to initiate it. You know? So he has to keep that part. But all the sub-absolute stuff is delegated. And it's not just a simple handful of people going down the hierarchy. It starts to spread out. You have 21 Ancients of Days. They're called the Super Fathers. There's 21 different fatherness-like individuals that possess a character of fatherness that the Universal Father doesn't have. He delegated that to them. You know? That's the complexity that the revelation is challenging us to begin to deal with. And it, the only way to really sort it out when you're talking about these kind of issues is you got to start with deity. You can't start with some individual and thinking about, well, I'm going to break his arm off and, you know, put it over there. I mean, you're not going to break an individual. You're not actually going to break deity either. Fundamental quality is unity. It's just that from an individuality viewpoint, from an individuality mode of engagement, like we can understand right now, there'll be different places and different ways that you can feel a focalization, a thicker point in deity that we will experience as being a localized individual. The Creator sons have father-type deity in them. Okay? And you don't want to think of it being really broken off. It's all a father deity. It's just that one of the faces comes out as one of those Creator sons. But of course, it's not just pure father in that case. There's father and son deity together and supreme-type deity now as a master son. But see, there's some of that father deity has a face through each of the Creator sons. You know, some of the father deity has a very direct face through this first master spirit. But it's all sub-absolute, that face, in that first master spirit. Okay.
Is one way that we could visualize this, we're also familiar in our time of seeing images of a cell divide, and then it divides again.
The issue there, see, is this, it's such an individuality fact. That's why the best one I've come up with so far is the seafloor, seamount analogy. You know, consider the Pacific plate, you know, the floor of the Pacific Ocean as being the father-type deity. Okay? And you have seamounts coming up off of that seafloor.
Hawaii.
Like Hawaii. Like the Hawaiian Islands or Guam or whatever. Yeah. Do you take some of the seafloor and break it off and float it on the top of the water? No, you don't separate it. You know, it's continuous coming up and pokes above the water and makes an island. You know, it's continuous deity. Okay? And from the individuality viewpoint, that's like looking down at the surface of the water. You can't see the sea mounts, you can't see the sea floor. All you can see is what pokes above the water from the individuality viewpoint. So from your viewpoint, there's these distinct, separate Hawaiian islands with nothing but water between them. No land bridges connecting them. Okay. And from, you know, if you were completely ignorant of any sort of a factual scientific perspective of the universe, you know, a primitive person would assume that those things are just floating on the water. Okay. But the moment you stick your head down under the water, you go, oh, it actually is below the water. So maybe it's like icebergs. You know, and part of them is below the water and part is above. But they're completely separate and just floating there. No, you develop diving gear and pretty soon you can actually follow it. It's like, oh my gosh, this goes all the way down to the bottom and connects to the other one and comes back up again. It's actually all the same stuff. Okay. That's like deity, you know. So if you look at it, if you imagine putting yourself underneath the seafloor and looking up, you just see one deity. So from that viewpoint, it's one. From the viewpoint top down, looking surface water, it's many. You know, and that's not illogical, because we can easily understand how you can bring those two facts together. Yeah. It's the same thing here. We often use that analogy to try to think about God the sevenfold. You know, where you definitely have this one facet of deity called the sevenfold, which is the seafloor, and all of these uncountable number of islands that poke above the water when you look at it from the other viewpoint. But you can use that same thing when you're trying to understand this. You have this father-type deity, and it pokes up above the water in a lot of different ways. Sometimes in a pure form, like the first master spirit. Sometimes blended with other, you know, basalt and granite together or something, you know, coming up. Like the father and the son, or the father and the spirit. So just put multiple seafloors, you know, superimpose them on, you know, and blend some of them together, bring some of them up pure, etc. All right, so you have these seven different ways that you can associate the three different flavors of deity expressed in a sub-absolute way. And then you take each of those different flavors of deity, like the one that's the Father, the Son, and the Spirit mixed together, and you personalize it. The Father bestows, the Universal Father bestows personality on that seventh flavor of deity, and that deity becomes personalized, it becomes God. So that's the basics. You've got these seven very high expressions, as we'll see as we go forward, expressions of deity, not downstepped a lot, and personalized. All right.
We know very little about the action of the Father and the Son in the creation of the Master Spirits. Apparently, they were brought into existence by the personal acts of the Infinite Spirit. But we have been definitely instructed that both the Father and the Son participated in their origin.
Okay, see, so here is the first thing there is tied to what I was just talking about. Notice what they're saying. They understand that we aren't literally thinking about the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit, like Numbers 1, 2, 3. You aren't literally thinking of those three individuals standing there and doing something together as three creative individuals, saying, well, I'll throw in some of my deity, and, you know, okay. It's not working like that. In terms of bringing the seven master spirits in existence, it's just the third person doing it. The other two are nowhere to be seen directly, overtly in the process. And they don't have to be there as individual, personal agents, because we don't need their personness. We need their deity flavor to be in play. And the key to this, we're not going to get into this, you know, the more advanced aspects of this paragraph, but remember, when you think about the three persons from the individuality viewpoint, you think about the first source and center, and then the first makes the second, and then the first and second get together and make the third. You know, that simple temporal-like sequence of thinking about the three persons coming into existence. So that in that, it's very easy in that way of thinking about it to recognize that the third person is going to have very direct input from the Father and from the Son, and of course it is the Spirit. So the three are together as one in the third person to begin with. There's another fact that very fundamentally we think of from an individuality viewpoint is having the three together as one. What's that fact? The Paradise Trinity. There's a very fundamental relationship between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity that's beyond the immediate scope of this. Okay, when you begin to unpack that, understand that, you can understand the details of this a little bit more. But the simplest way to, you know, once you know that or appreciate that that's there, this fundamental immutable relationship between the third source and center, between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity. Well, the Father's related to the Trinity and the Son's related to the Trinity. So their deity, through the deity of the Paradise Trinity, can come into play through the Paradise Trinity. That's fundamentally how this is happening. I mean, they don't understand the details, and of course I don't either, but the basic, you know, when they say we know very little about, they didn't say we don't know anything about, they know very little. They may not know any more than what I just said. That's the way those, you know, that's why they're unseen actors. The Paradise Trinity is sort of blocking any view of them being directly involved. They aren't directly involved. It's through the Paradise Trinity and then into the Infinite Spirit that, you know, comes into play. That deity comes into play. Okay, now, we're just about, you know, we're kind of belaboring this beginning, just so you can kind of get spun up a little bit. It'll start to flow a little bit more easily now.
In spirit, character, and nature, the seven spirits of paradise are as one. But in all other aspects of identity, they are very unlike. And the results of their functioning in the super universes are such that the individual differences of each are unmistakably discernible. All the afterplans of the seven segments of the grand universe, and even the correlative segments of outer space, have been conditioned by the other than spiritual diversity of these seven master spirits of supreme and ultimate supervision.
Okay. A few little details they've thrown in there. So, in spirit, character, and nature, these seven master spirits of paradise are as one. Well, as we get in a little bit further, we'll talk about this explicitly. Even though they have this very distinct seven different flavors of deity, there's a commonality through them. There's something that they have in common. They aren't wholly disjoint. They're relatable. There's a unity to them. the spirit character in nature. So that there is a superadditive consequence of the relationship through all the seven. An eighth fact. Okay. You know, that commonality that they have is manifest, literally. Just like you can think of the commonality amongst the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit, you know, from an individuality viewpoint, is expressed as the Paradise Trinity. Okay, you have a similar thing here. And, you know, again, beyond the immediate details, that eighth fact is very intimately tied to the Paradise Trinity, that relationship between the infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity. But you don't need to understand that right now. So that's what they're alluding to there, and you'll see they talk about it explicitly a little later on. Now notice, we saw this for the first time back in paper 13 when we were talking about the sacred spheres. Notice we already brought them up. There's a lot of connection here. This fact that there aren't just seven segments of the grand universe, and even the correlative segments of outer space. Remember, they mentioned that before, that each of the outer space levels has a sevenfold segmentation to it. Well, see, just telling you that, they actually don't have to tell you the last couple words in the paragraph. I mean, the moment that they say that there's this shadow that the seven master spirits is casting that doesn't just strike the grand universe, it strikes the whole master universe. They cast a sevenfold shadow over the whole master universe. That must mean they're a lot more than supreme. Yeah. Or they'd be limited to the grand universe. Yeah, see, these seven master spirits of supreme and ultimate supervision. So when we say it's sub-absolute, it's not skipping over a whole bunch of stuff and going way down somewhere. We're talking just dropping down and, okay, they're there. Now, we mentioned this back again in paper 13 when we were talking about the beings who are the directors of the Father's worlds. Do you remember the names of those beings that are the directors of the Father's worlds? It's kind of a tricky name. The Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy. Remember them? And when they were talking about them, they introduced some interesting things. They were saying that they had not only supreme personality activity, not only ultimate personality activity, but supreme ultimate. And you remember that? It was the first time we kind of really started talking about supreme ultimate. Okay, so let's touch on that again. So, yeah, let's pull this up. So when you look at the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart here, I'm just bringing it up so that you can remind yourself about the creators in the sevenfold. Okay, so we're talking about the master spirits right here. And immediately below them is the Ancients of Days. Okay? And both of them are God. Both of them are personalized deity. Part of God, the sevenfold. Okay, so here we have it very explicitly stated that the master spirits have both supreme and ultimate personality activity. You drop down a notch, the gods below, those are the first beings on the finite personality record. They only have supreme. See, so that's the downstepping there. Here you have supreme and ultimate. Drop down, you just have supreme. Supreme Trinity personalities. Yeah. But they're both God. Okay, but they're definitely hierarchically related like that, just by at what level their deity manifests, and what's being personalized. And to bring in, when you bring in the Ancients of Days, okay, those Supreme Trinity personalities, well, there's a hierarchy. When we, you know, in fact, when we get a couple papers up and we talk about them, there's a hierarchy that they fit into of all the of days. Well, and there's two groups above the Ancients of Days. And one notch up is the Eternals of Days, and then all the way up is the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy. Okay? Those two groups are not God. They're not personalized deity. They're very, very high persons. Okay? And how high are they? Well, so if you have the Master Spirits, Supreme and Ultimate, you drop down to Ancients of Days, just Supreme, and then let's go over here. We have the Ancients of Days are just Supreme, but they're God. But you go up a notch, the Eternals of Days are Supreme and Ultimate, but not God. You go up another notch, the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy, they're Supreme, Ultimate, and Supreme Ultimate, and not God. Okay, so you have these hierarchies. Some are God, some are not God. But obviously, you know, you can do some pretty profound things if you have not just Supreme, not just Ultimate, but also Supreme Ultimate. In other words, personality activity that engages the co-absolute, transcendent of Master Universe sorts of stuff. Those beings that direct the Father's worlds, very transcendent, extremely transcendent, but not God. Yeah. So, you know, just to begin to, you know, bring that incredible new diversity into your whole, set of religious facts, see, you know, as it were.
Well, what's the, other than the term personalized deity, okay, mm-hmm. But what makes an Ancient of Days God and an Eternal of Days not God? Are they not personalized deities?
Right. They're not personalized deity. They're divine. I mean, we were just talking about it. Some of them are supreme ultimate divinity. Some are even, you know, supreme and ultimate and supreme ultimate divinity. They're very high expressions of divinity, perhaps.
And this is the Father, that this universal Father decides.
But, I mean, from our, you know, we have such a limited, you know, even with the revelation way to talk about this. But to begin to think about it, I've suggested, you know, you think about matter and mind energy, you know, the literal energy, mind energy, and spirit substance, you know, having those, that threefold energy is sort of literal things that you might imagine making a body out of or something. Okay, making things out of, or with, bring in a fourth stuff that you could use to make a body out of, deity. Okay, so an Eternal of Days has some sort of really fancy stuff that his body is made out of, but it's not deity stuff, purely deity stuff. Yeah.
So it's personalized deity, but is it the universal Father that decides, that personalizes this stuff that makes it God?
Well, it's an issue of if it's a deity self, when it gets personalized, it's God.
When it gets personalized, but
that makes it God.
Well, who
decided on what the kind of selves, what kind of bodies, as it were, the seven master spirits are going to have? Not the Father, not the Son. The infinite Spirit decided what kind of bodies they're going to have. They are going to have deity bodies. And when the Father personalized them, that made them God.
Okay, the Father personalized
them. But, the only thing that the Father is doing, and the Father recognizes that this is a deity self, that he's personalizing. So he has his one selector. He has two types of personality that he's handing out, creature personality and creator personality. Okay, when he sees that the self that he's about to personalize is deity stuff, he hands a creator personality to that self.
Doesn't he see other deity selves that he decides not to
No. Oh, well, there's some deity selves that aren't personalizable, like the Paradise Trinity is a deity self that's not personalizable. Right, see, so the Trinity can give rise to beings, give rise to selves, but the Trinity doesn't personalize any of them. The Father, or maybe the Infinite Spirit, you know, is third source, if they're a third source personality, is going to actually personalize them. Yeah. You know, and if the Paradise Trinity makes the body of an Ancient of Days, you know, the self, you know, just think of it just as the body, you know, it's the whole self, mindful self, and the form that goes with it. And when the Paradise Trinity made an ancient of the self of an Ancient of Days, he made it out of deity stuff. And so the Father gave it creator personality. You know, Ancients of Days are God. But when the Paradise Trinity made an Eternal of Days, the Paradise Trinity didn't make the self of an Eternal of Days out of deity stuff. Made it out of some really fancy non-deity stuff, you know, whatever that you want to think of that being. Yeah.
So what is the Ancients of Days ever created?
They're part of the creation of the life carriers. So if the Ancients of Days hadn't created life carriers, none of us would be in this room, because the life carriers made us. Okay? Not, of course, individually, one by one, but you know, they initiated life. The Ancients of Days have an awful lot to do with a lot of things. They're creator beings.
Isn't what's passed on in procreation from the life carriers?
Well, I mean,
it's well involved.
There's a whole bunch of things. But, you know, this one other little example. These beings, the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days, who made them? The Ancients of Days made them. Okay, these reflective mother spirits, who made them? Of the master spirits. The master spirits made them. Okay, so master spirits make these beings selves. The Ancients of Days make these beings selves. And then they get personalized. Now, in this case, like, well, you know, those are mother beings. You know, those may be third source personalities. We don't know for sure exactly what kind of personality. But, you know, they're definitely persons. Either the first or the third source personalized them. Yeah. But who made them? The Ancient of Days made them.
There's only one, like the Infinite Mother Spirit. There's only one being like that.
Yeah, there is just the Infinite Mother Spirit, yeah. Yeah. Now, of course, there's probably a countless number of beings that the Ancients of Days have created that are not revealed in the Revelation, because they don't have anything to do with the Ascension Scheme.
I'm just trying to understand the fundamental difference. And so an Eternal of Days is not only not God, it's not a creator.
It's not a creator.
Okay. So the creators are gods because that's what's required then.
Deity stuff.
I mean, it couldn't work if they weren't.
Now, there is a way of bringing something into existence in a creative, creation-like way, and I don't mean procreation, like what we do, just as mortals, yeah. There's another way of bringing a being into existence, you know, trinitization. I mean, like the self of an Ancient of Days wasn't created by the Paradise Trinity. It was trinitized into existence by the Paradise Trinity as another method of bringing something into existence. Okay, and as finaliters, we can do trinitization.
Yeah.
You can do things on par with what existential beings do, creators do. But yeah, you can't live. You know, you're not an existential being, so you're not actually going to be a creator ever. But you know, even just getting to paradise, you know, from then on, you're a trinitizer potentially. And you know, so when you say, you know, when you go out as a finality or God the Mother revealing, that could be really, really literal. Let me reveal something that wasn't existing before. A creature trinitized son. Now there is a revelation of God the Mother in a very literal fashion. A being has been brought into existence by you in a way that's a lot more direct than procreation. You know, you're as a procreator, you're just a conduit through which creation is flowing. Okay, this is originating with you as a trinitizer.
And what's the path for those beings? Are they ascenders?
No, they're not even. I mean, especially if it's you know, where you're getting the trinitized sons of the trinitized sons of destiny. I mean, they don't seem to even have anything to do with really this universe age. I mean, you know, remember, you're bringing two things together in a super additive consequence. So in many ways, you're bringing your child is above you. Yeah. See? you've done a very literal super additive thing. You know? You created a being that's now a ward of the architects of the master universe.
Not necessarily participating directly in anything.
In the whole supreme finite thing at all, yeah. All right, let's see. There was one other thing, wasn't there? Let's see. So notice what they emphasize in that paragraph also, that these seven super universes, that they have these seven very distinct natures to them. It's not because, fundamentally, because the personalities of the seven master spirits are absolutely unique. Yes, they are, but that's not really the key issue. It's not the personality shadow that makes the seven super universes different as they are. It's the deity shadow.
Right.
We have our whole super universe is flavored by the flavor of the deity, the type of self that is the seventh master spirit. The personality just purposes that flavor.
Right.
It's flavored by deity, and purposed by personality.
Deity expression, a fundamental deity.
Right. So just notice, see, yeah, we haven't gone very far, and see, the only way we can even really begin to talk about this is we have to talk about deity. That's why I said it twice in the first paragraph. This is, you have to think in deity terms. They're expecting that you have taken their suggestion up at the beginning of the foreword, noticing that deity was first, God was second. You've been thinking about deity. You've got it in your head a bit, and you're going to be able to start using it now. Okay? Remember, this is a book that reveals truth. You can't believe truth to know truth. You have to use truth to know truth. If you're not using the revelation, you aren't experiencing the revelation. You have to use it to know it. Okay? So, you don't just believe that deity is antecedent to its personalization. You're saying, okay, they're suggesting I try that out. Let's try it out. Oh, wow, this is actually working. When I think about it like that, I can start to understand what's going on here. When I didn't think about it like that, my eyes just glazed over as I read paper after paper of this stuff. It's like, what on earth are they talking about? You have to take their suggestions and start using you in order to begin to experience the flow of truth. You can't understand the fifth epical revelation with nothing but God. If your initial thought is God, most of the book is completely inaccessible to you. Like we've tried to bring out, even if you limit yourself to purely the individuality viewpoint, an awful lot of the book is not even remotely accessible to you. The only way to understand it and begin to feel the truth of it flowing through you and transforming the way you live your life is to bring in the unity viewpoint, the deity viewpoint. Yeah. You have to start using the revelation in order to acquire the revelation.
Yeah, but to each one of us, you know, we have our own unity with the book.
We may not have to, we may not be able to. When I read this, I may take something a little bit different than you, when you read it. You may take it to a different level. But to me, it grows me. It grows my understanding, makes me a better person. And I do use it, but I may not go where you go.
But you one day will. One day we'll all go where Grand Fonda has gone. You know, as a matter of fact, in the not very distant future at all, we'll all look at this and see exactly the same thing. That's part of the goal. The extent to which each of us sees the cosmos differently is the extent to which we aren't kindred minds yet. And we're still very immature. The extent to which a particular Melchizedek doesn't see the cosmos clearly is the extent to which he makes an error. One day you'll be devoid of error. You know, Melchizedek's even hope that each of them will one day be devoid of the potential for a little error. All of us are striving to move up, okay, into a relationship with a common fact. There is only one universal harmony. And the fact that our personalities are absolutely unique has nothing whatsoever to do with changing that fact. It doesn't matter that your personality is absolutely unique. There's one universal harmony. And if you don't see it in common, you aren't seeing it. This is the fifth epic world. This is something that you can't understand from the fourth epical revelation. It's something, as a matter of fact, that you, in the wake of the fourth epical revelation, humans have gotten very, very turned completely around on into this very self-centered universe where my personality is absolutely unique. Therefore, what I say is, if I say the universe looks like Bob, then that's what it is. If I say it looks like Frank, then that's what it is. No, the universe could care less, you know, what you think. This is the key. You know, none of us, you know, it's like, well, if that's what we're supposed to be doing is seeing the same, then it's hopeless. Well, no. We're not supposed to do that immediately. We're given something that we can have in common at a very early stage to get us going. But we're given it by the initiator to get us going. We can achieve common, you know, a spirit viewpoint, kindred spirits. That's not very difficult to at least all get a common recognition of unity, okay? And to take a hold of that with our faith grasp and start purposing it with our absolutely unique personality so we have a common unity, but each of us uses it in a, you know, purposes it in a unique way. But that's just to get you started. Because what you really have to get to is a common relationship with the cosmos. Not just a spiritual consciousness that you're purposing, but a cosmic consciousness that you're purposing. And see, that what that cosmic consciousness sees is, again, going to be the same. If Chris sees a different cosmos than I do, then one of us, at least, is not seeing the cosmos, and most likely both of us are. Fall short, okay? We have to get, and, you know, in order to have the brotherhood of man that we all desire from our kindred spirit recognition, we have to become kindred minds. It's like, wow, that's just not going to happen tomorrow, is it then? Yeah, that's the fifth epical revelation. It's trying to help us. You're going to need to be patient about the brotherhood of man because it's not a fiat thing of kindred spirit, which you can... You know, you could establish, if everyone just chose it, practically overnight. But kindred minds, it doesn't matter if tomorrow every single person on the planet wholeheartedly consecrates themselves to the perfect will of God the Father. It's still going to take a long time to reach kindred minds. Because that's an experiential deity phenomenon, which is fundamentally a temporal phenomenon. The kindred spirit is an existential deity phenomenon, you know, a relationship to existential deity. And that's an atemporal phenomenon. That's an eternal fact. It can happen just like that. But the brotherhood of man takes, even with perfect, you know, supervision, no rebellion, no default, it takes millions and millions and millions. You know, it takes a long time to get to the age of light and life, because that's full-blown kindred minds. And it doesn't happen except through time. If you try to do it skipping the time part, that's called rebellion. It's not real. It's only real if it's temporal. It's like, well, I can visualize it. Yeah, that's because you can visualize things that aren't real. You can visualize figments. Lucifer visualized a figment, skipping the time thing. It's like, I can visualize light and life. I can just institute it by fiat. No, you can't. It's not real. What you can institute by fiat is not real. And it will not be upheld by the creative mother spirit. It will collapse. She only holds what's real. Not because that's, you know, she refuses to hold it. It's because the only thing she can hold. That's the only thing that has a relationship to her. If you make something that isn't real, it falls right through her hand. Not through between her fingers. It passes right through her. Okay? She has no relationship to that which is unreal.
No coupling.
Right. There's no coupling. Yeah. All right, let's see. Okay, so let's get some more here.
The master spirits have many functions, but at the present time, their particular domain is the central supervision of the seven super universes. Each master spirit maintains an enormous force focal headquarters, which slowly circulates around the periphery of paradise, always maintaining a position opposite the super universe of immediate supervision, and at the paradise focal point of its specialized power control and segmental energy distribution. The radial boundary lines of any one of the super universes do actually converge at the paradise headquarters of the supervising master spirit.
Okay, so now this offers, you know, that geometric picture they drew at the end is very purposeful for you to think about that tied to the previous paragraph and kind of upset any sort of simple picture that you're starting to form. Okay, so they say, you know, literally getting you to visualize converging radial lines, you know, like the sides of a pie wedge coming together at a point in the center of the pie. Okay, well, if we think about the seven super universes, the seven segments of that donut of space, that torus of space that goes around the center of all things, you know, chopped into seven segments, you know, as with literal flat walls separating them, okay, just bring those planes, those walls, you know, converging in to the center, you know, you can definitely picture this. So, okay, so I say I've got these master spirits that are on the aisle on high, and they cast this shadow, this triangular shadow down onto the grand universe, and each of them, you know, has a wedge. Okay, that's really easy. But what did they say up there? They said even the correlative segments of outer space. It's like, well, wait a minute. The super universe level is going counterclockwise. The first outer space level is going clockwise. Second is going counterclockwise. So if I imagine casting a triangular shadow, how? See, so you can't think of it in simple finite terms. The beings that are casting this shadow, are they finite beings? Are they even just supreme beings? No. Supreme and ultimate. When they cast a shadow from a very transcendent point, okay, something that's above the finite, even above the absentite, okay, what you're seeing there is, oh, this could be kind of complicated. When you downstep something like that, and see the shadow that's cast, it might not be simple, finite geometry that can picturize it. Yeah, it's going to totally not be picturizable with finite geometry. Yeah, but there are seven segments of the first outer space level, you know, that's going in the opposite direction. Okay, you know, and it's not like they're casting one here and one out there, and they're trying to keep track of them going in opposite. No, they're just casting one shadow. But when you look at the footprint of that shadow down here in the finite, you see these segments that are going in alternate directions, and you know, it's because it's a projection not from a high vantage point of the finite, but from something very transfinite, and it takes on interesting patterns when it's projected down here. Okay. So, but they wanted you to, you know, to be trying to do that, and I'm going, wait a minute. Yeah. And of course, you know, we've talked about, I mean, even the notion that there, you know, that you can think about this simplistically, you know, that in the finite, here's this Isle of Paradise with a periphery that has seven focus points on it. No, I mean, as you're bringing these planes of the super universe walls, you know, in, you know, conceptually, first you got to get through the central universe. Well, that's a transcendent domain. You got to take it up to go through. And it's like, well, what's going to happen to my walls when I go into absentite geometry? Yeah, what is going to happen to them? In truth, there is a focus point. The fact that there's some really complicated geometry of the shadows that are cast is really secondary. You know, the truth that there is this singular point which from which everything that happens out here comes. Like they're saying, the focal point of its specialized power control and segmental energy distribution. All the control and all the energy comes from this singular source point that's supervised by that master spirit. And of course, the direct controller person is, you remember, the seven directors. Yep, seven supreme power directors are the cohorts with the master spirits in that power stuff. All right, let's do one more section here.
One, relation to triune deity. The conjoint creator, the infinite spirit, is necessary to the completion of the triune personalization of undivided deity. This threefold deity personalization is inherently sevenfold in possibility of individual and associative expression. Hence, the subsequent plan to create universes inhabited by intelligent and potentially spiritual beings, duly expressive of the Father, Son, and Spirit, made the personalization of the seven master spirits inescapable. We have come to speak of the threefold personalization of deity as the absolute inevitability, which we have come to look upon, the appearance of the seven master spirits as sub-absolute inevitability.
So like just what we've been talking, that's you've got, you know, what you're understanding on an absolute level, these three absolute persons, you know, kind of often we forget about the super absolute stuff, you know, I just think we have three absolute persons, but we have these seven sub-absolute persons. And did you notice what they did at the beginning there? So the conjoint creator, the infinite spirit, is necessary to the completion of the triune personalization of undivided deity. Ooh, that's not the bottom-up point of view. See, that's actually the top-down point of view, where we start with it all together, and then there's three parts that are individuatable and then personalizable, the three persons, and what's left is undivided deity is the Trinity. Paradise Trinity. Yeah. See, so that's actually the top-down point of view of the relationship between amongst the four. And why did they do that? Because they're trying to take us down. You know, you start with one, come down a notch and you have three. You come down another notch and you have seven. They're trying to get you, you know, see the flow down with the picture. And so that, you know, so that it all fits together. If you think of the bottom-up point of view of the Trinity, you know, then it's like, well, where do the seven master spirits fit in? There's no obvious way that they fit into that picture. They're just sort of this side note. You know, that's a simple example. It's like, oh, well, it's just very straightforward to picture this way. I have one, and then I have three when I project down, and then I have seven when I project down another notch.
I just think of them all made of glass. You see right through.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just, yeah. See, you can see the immediate power of the unity viewpoint, the top-down viewpoint, you know, and just making it much easier to understand where some of these beings fit into the picture. Because, you know, like I was saying, I mean, they started out with deity, you know, and if you just have that individuality viewpoint and you start reading paper after paper, like we're going to read now, you just get overwhelmed. It's like, it's just, you know, being after being after being after being, and you know, and you're just trying to somehow lay them all out and sideways in some vast plane of memory, and you just can't keep track of it all. If you start getting the right orientation on it, it's much easier to, oh, okay, and now it's not, they're off, not over here as an afterthought. It's just a very simple thing. 1 to 3 to 7, that's the simple sequence. Okay. All right.
While the seven master spirits are hardly expressive of threefold deity, they are the eternal portrayal of sevenfold deity, the active and associative functions of the three ever-existent persons of deity. By and in and through these seven spirits, the universal Father, the eternal Son, or the infinite Spirit, or any dual association is able to function as such. When the Father, the Son, and the Spirit act together, they can and do function through Master Spirit number 7, but not as the Trinity. The Master Spirits singly and collectively represent any and all possible deity functions, single and several, but not collective, not the Trinity. Master Spirit number 7 is personally non-functional with regard to the Paradise Trinity, and that is just why he can function personally for the Supreme Being.
Okay. Bring out a couple things in there. So they're stressing this some more, and when they say things like by and in and through these seven spirits, the universal Father, the eternal Son, or the infinite Spirit, or any dual association is able to function as such, sub-absolutely, you know, just always remind yourself of that. They're not talking about an absolute expression. So, for instance, when we're talking about the seventh master spirit, and they say, see, when the Father, the Son, and the Spirit act together, they can and do function through master spirit number 7, but not as the Trinity, also not as the first triunity, which is also an associative expression. But see, that's more the three individuals, not the deity picture, but just thinking, you know, the three individuals, the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit, working together in an association, that's the first triunity. Okay? And that's the three absolute persons doing that. That's an absolute thing. I mean, we're talking about sub-absolute here. You know, so you know, but not as the Trinity and not as the first triunity. Okay. And then the other thing, Master Spirit number 7 is a very key individual in relation to all ascenders. After all, remember, what's the seventh world of the Father called? Ascendington. Okay. So, not surprisingly, the seventh master spirit, well, is, you know, not just for us, but for all ascenders, plays a very key role. You know, not just seven super universe ascenders. And Another thing that comes into play is what they're beginning to talk about here. They'll go into greater detail later. So Master Spirit number 7 is personally non-functional with regard to the Paradise Trinity, and that is just why he can function personally for the Supreme Being. Now, it's a pretty intense philosophical statement that you need to carefully reflect and try to unpack. Try this out as an initial tack at it. When we talk about the Supreme Being, we often do what we just did a little bit ago. The Supreme Being is the Supreme Father. You know, and one of the first things that fun little sentences they give us when they talk about the Father early on in the book is they say, he freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. Ooh, I like that. That's a beautiful poetic thing to kind of toss around in your mind. You know, well, downstep that. You know, if you have an infinite father idea, freeing himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, well, how would that sentence read if I downstepped that down to the supreme level? Well, the supreme being would be freeing himself from the fetters of unqualified supremacy. Okay? Unqualified supremacy. Well, you know, they just used that expression in the previous paragraph talking about the Paradise Trinity, undivided deity. Undivided, unqualified. Okay? That totality attitude of things that the Trinity is up to, like the functioning of the Trinity relative to the supreme level, the Trinity of supremacy. Okay? That's a very unqualified presence, very totality attitude engagement of that. So one way you can think about the Supreme One, the Supreme Being, freeing himself from the fetters of unqualified supremacy, is freeing himself from being bound up in that Trinity presence, that functional Trinity presence, the Trinity of supremacy. Okay. So see, because Master Spirit number 7 doesn't have any sort of direct personal linkage to the Paradise Trinity, he, in a sense, he is freed from the fetters of the unqualified supremacy of the functioning of that Trinity. So he can express that nature of the Supreme Being, that freed himself from the fetters of unqualified supremacy. That's an initial kind of basic way to kind of appreciate the way they say it in such a causal fashion, and that is just why. You know, X, you know, A implies B is, you know, the way they're constructing that. See? Okay? It's just because the Trinity is very much a part. So effectively you have this freed from. But in the case of the seventh master spirit, you have all three persons involved. So there is something that's kind of like the Trinity. You know? Okay? See, so, and where does the personal purposive part of the eventual supreme being come from? Right now, that personal purposive part is what we call the universal mother. The universal mother. Mother facts come from the Trinity. They have a relationship to the Trinity. Well, a being that has the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, certainly has some similarity to the Trinity. See the parallel there? The fact that there's all three, so there's something that's kind of like the Trinity, is like Mother Deity is like the Trinity. You know, that Mother Deity eventually becomes the personality aspect of, you know, the personal purposive aspect of the Supreme Being. See how it fits? You know, it's not simple. It's complicated, but that's what they're trying to get you to see, is that because of that similarity to the Trinity, The seventh master spirit can do a lot of things to help us come into relationship with supremacy. Seventh master spirit helps us on the sixth circuit of Avona. And it doesn't matter if you're an ascender from the first super universe or what. Helps all ascenders to do that sixth circuit of Avona thing and come into relationship with supremacy because of this. There's a Trinity likeness. So there's a personal purposiveness of the supreme likeness. And it is not all bound up in the Trinity. You know, it's separate to a degree and distinct, like the supreme being will be definitively freed from the fetters of, see? So that's what's going on there. Yep.
Would it be just as accurate to say Master Spirit number six is personally non-functional with regard to the paradigm?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so all seven of them.
Just making this specific point.
But the difference is that, you know, with that separation, there's also the threefoldness that's Trinity-like, see? Just like the threefold, that Trinity-likeness is in the Supreme Being, but is separate from the Trinity. That's the parallel, that's the similarity. Whereas the other six don't have all three, so they don't have that very direct Trinity-likeness.
How blessed we are.
So, you know, yeah, just so obviously that influence is, you know, that flavor of deity being abroad in our super universe is why the ascension scheme is the primary scheme in this super universe. Okay. The whole universe is flavored with that deity. The quality of deity, divinity. It has that flavor of divinity. Our super universe has that ascension scheme flavor of divinity. The shadow cast by that deity.
Could we be more of a mother super universe than all the other ones? Mother white?
Yeah.
Yeah. See.
Remember the things they talked about?
Yeah. Right.
But the destiny of this place?
Right. Yeah. They were just, yeah, we were pointing that out. Chris remembers we were just. They were just pointing that out at the end of the previous paper. Yeah. It's just exactly what we're talking about. The fact that you have all three here in that Trinity likeness, that mother likeness, you know, there the personal purposiveness is thicker here. You know, personal purposiveness of the eventual supreme being is thicker here. And that's why some of the revelators speculate that when all is said and done with the grand universe, the supreme being, you know, when that personal purposiveness totally coalesces into an individual, a he, instead of a ubiquitous she, that his headquarters will be on Universa. You know, the thickest spot won't translate. It'll just stay in place. You know, they think that it's probably a foretaste of the headquarters to come, that it's thicker here right now. And it's coalescing here. Yeah.
Well, one question like that brings to mind, like the world, the number three, third, the infinite spirit. So when the master son of that world become, I mean, he wouldn't necessarily bring realization of the Father, Son, and Spirit like Jesus did for us. Infinite Spirit would bring.
Well, okay, you're mixing a number of things together there. I mean, Matt, I mean, Michael, you know, is on a seventh bestowal.
Yeah.
Okay. And the seventh bestowal of a Creator Son is always dedicated to a revelation of the will of just the Father. It's actually a first Master Spirit like revelation. Remember how when we went through the seven bestowals? You know, there's seven bestowals because there's seven master spirits. There's seven different flavors that it takes to encompass the supremacy that the Creator Son is attempting to achieve. You know, so their Creator Sons are always doing master spirit number one like revelation in their seventh bestowal. Doesn't matter what super universe they're in. They're always doing so. You know, he's in the seventh master, seventh super universe, but he's doing master spirit number one stuff on his seventh bestowal. Yeah. So, see, that's a nice little way of appreciating. It's like, wow, this is really complicated. It's all overlapping, and yeah. I mean, none of this is starkly differentiated, like we'll be reminded of very soon, even at the highest level. So you've got this master spirit, and he says, okay, this is my super universe. And the first thing that he lays down is all seven reflective mother spirits, one of each flavor. You know, see, so the very first thing he does is superimpose all seven flavors upon his super universe, not just his flavor of reflective mother spirit. So right from the get-go, all seven things are together as one here. You know, if he didn't lay all seven reflective mother spirits out in his super universe, a creator son couldn't have seven bestowals. If he only laid out six, a creator son could only do six bestowals. There would be no way to do one of the seven. There would be no upholding of that effort. There would be no mother presence of that flavor in this super universe to uphold that effort on his part. He would attempt it and it would fail. It's not being upheld. You have to have all seven to uphold all of the different things. They were just kind of alluding to that. I mean, you've got Father, Son, Spirit, and every combination all going on in every super universe at the same time. So there has to be all seven flavors of upholding going on in every super universe.
You brought up a point just then. He would do it, but he would fail. And it made me think of this man, this senator that Jesus met in his Mediterranean travels. And he talked to this senator, and this senator was so impressed with what Jesus said, mm-hmm. and he went out and tried to change the government of his time, and he totally failed.
Because he was trying to skip the time thing.
Yeah.
Jesus kept telling him, I could do that, but I would fail because my time is not yet.
And that's why with this fifth epical, we're given supremacy. This is supremacy because if we want to have an effect, we got to start to develop a sense of the supreme and where we are in the growth of this. Time and space.
The attempted mark. Realization
of the supreme.
Right. See, there you go. Yeah. Right. See.
Otherwise, we're going to do the same thing. Right. You're going to be doing all kinds of activity and flailing around and not having any effect.
And of course, you say, "Well, it must be my fault. You know, it must be my imperfection."
I didn't
work hard. That's why I tried to stress that the Creator's Son would fail in one of those bestowals, not because of any imperfection on his part. There's not just father deity in play. Individuals don't just stand in the vacuum, okay, and say, let it be, and it is. I mean, the universal father might create, but if there wasn't something to hold his creation, what would happen to his creation? It would fall. It would fail. If there is no mother deity that remains within, when he goes on the outside and starts creating, pointing his finger inside and saying, boink, 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 create, create, create. If there wasn't an upholder inside, all of his perfect little creations would fall into oblivion. Something has to hold them. There has to be mother deity to uphold the acts of the Father. I mean, the Father, remember way up in the beginning, it says the Father initiates and maintains. It's like, well, sounds like he does it all, but when you get into the details, what part does the Father uphold? He's the infinite upholder, only. He doesn't uphold the next notch down even, the co-infinite, let alone clear down to the finite. Okay? If he were to make something of a co-infinite nature, and there wasn't a co-infinite upholder, there wasn't the infinite mother spirit, his creation would fall. His act would fail. to stand the test of eternity. It has to be upheld. He doesn't uphold anything except the top. Everything below is mother deity. Downstepped expressions of the self-experiential deity, the infinite upholder, down into experiential deity, the mother.
In that sense, ancient peoples perceived something that we've lost in our time, which is a sort of holiness about everything.
Now is a divine dispensation. Now and here, time and space are a divine dispensation because they're pervaded by deity, mother deity.
And we are so cut off from that, the very air we breathe.
It's the first epical revelation of the mother. We're not cut off anymore. Unless you choose to continue to try to rationalize your life with just transcendental deity. Now, God is transcendence. God apart, and the moment that's all there is like, well, he's apart. In other words, we're not together. I've fallen from my, the whole, theologies that we have immediately come into play. But if there's mother deity, if there's God as immanence, then there is no separation. Yeah, it's a magnificent revelation of good news. The good news is you cannot fall because there are no places in time or space that aren't pervaded by God. Not God the Father, God the Mother. And the only way that you can fail to make it to eternity is if you choose not to be held. It's like, well, how do I choose not to be held? If you choose to make yourself unreal, unreal things do what when you lay them on the mother's hand? They go right through. Be real and you're fine. Okay? If you choose to be absolutely unreal, not even the co-infinite upholder can hold you up. Okay, you will fall right through her hand into oblivion. Oh, yeah, somewhere over here. Yeah.
And yet, such an important part of Jesus' teaching was making this consecrated desire to do the Father's will.
Right, because, if you don't initiate yourself, how many steps can you take?
None.
Okay. I mean, you have to establish a relationship to the initiator, to the Father, first. The fourth epical revelation preceded the fifth. The initiation precedes the walking. You start with a will, and now there is a way. The fifth epical revelation is about the way. Let's start walking. Let's just don't sit here basking in our initiation.
Is that
doing? Right. One must do something as well as be something. To do, you have to have a relationship to, experiential deity. To be, you only need a relationship to existential deity, to the Father. But all doing has to have a relationship to experiential deity. It has to take into account time and space. My hour has not yet come. Okay? That's a recognition that if he's going to do something, he has to do it in relationship with experiential deity.
Even revealing the Father.
Even revealing the Father. Even the Father getting you encircuited in his personality circuit. Even that doing has to be in relationship to experiential deity. That circuit, that volitional circuit, flows in a substance. Deity's substance. Father deity? No. There isn't a ubiquitous father deity inside. It flows through the mother. She's the way. bosom of the Father, quote unquote, right? The mother, okay, you know, is the way to get his circuit to you and back to him. He's just the will. He's not the way. She's the way for his circuit to be encircuited.
Yeah. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about I've been under the impression for a long time about the worlds, you know, the seven super universes, and I thought that, like, each one of these seven master spirits was mm-hmm. like the, because we understand the Father, Son, and Spirit here, that that's our way to get to God, that I thought that each one of these, you know, was how it was revealed through that spirit. But it's not then? They all have the Father, Son, and Spirit, even though mm-hmm. the Eternal Son is the one that would be, that he would speak for the Eternal Son, that spirit.
For instance, you know, a simple way to think about that is take an ascender from the third super universe, bring him up to his super universe capital, and then bring him into Havona. Okay, and he's going to start going through the circuits of Havona. He has to find the Infinite Spirit. Then he has to find the Eternal Son. Then he has to find the Universal Father. He has to have the ability to find all three, or he's going to fail in his Havona journey, 100% guaranteed. Okay? He has, no matter what super universe you come from, there has to be the ability to acquire what you need to be in relationship with all three. Now, remember when we were reading about Havona? They talked about that. There is this differential. So, for instance, if you have an ascender in the third super universe, where the deity, these flavor that he's been immersed in, is the spirit-type deity. Every once in a while, there is an ascender from the third super universe that fails in the first effort to find the Son or the Father. Okay? Not all of them. It's not 100% of them. But along what you're thinking, there are occasional exceptions. There are that particular purposing of that ascender in the third super universe was such that it was very, very precisely aligned with just the Infinite Spirit sort of gist of things. So precisely aligned was that purposing that when he got to Havona, he couldn't find the Son. He doesn't have a broad enough field of view. He's very narrowly focused. So he's got to go out to one of the other super universes that have the Father or the Son, you know, directly involved and pick up that stuff in his experiential career so that, you know, he has a broader field of view and it can actually see the, you know, find the Son and the Father. But those are exceptions, you know, rare exceptions. By and large, you can have all kinds of different purposings in the third super universe, and they still find the Son and the Father. They're not hyper-focused on just these things. And like I said, the way that you most easily understand that is in the third super universe, there are seven different reflective mother spirits, not just three-like ones, not just ones that are like the third master, you know, made by the third master spirit. There's reflective mothers, one reflective mother spirit from each of the seven master spirits in the third super universe. Okay.
Why is it?
So you can pick up it all there.
Yeah. Why is it through experience that we are able to recognize existential deity?
Well, the only, sort of a simple way to understand, you know, what's going on as you get into the center of all things there. Wow, it sure is handy that I have a thought adjuster at my core, a fragment of existential deity. Even if I don't so much directly relate to it, that core of me as a spirit being then is relatable to existential deity. So, you know, that tells you a little something about the beings in the universe that have the ability to sort of recognize the three infinite persons, they're going to have some kind of a core in them that's ultimately relatable. You know, if they're made in such a way that they just, not even at their deepest core, they have something that's relatable, it's impossible to find coming to any synchronization with existential deity. Yeah. If we weren't given an adjuster, forget it. It's impossible. You could have 100 trillion years of experience in all 7 super universes and you wouldn't find the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. Okay? You need the adjuster.
Right. But when the 7 master spirits vacate their individual seats of personal power and super universe authority and assemble about the conjoint actor in the triune presence of paradise deity, then and there are they collectively representative of the functional power, wisdom, and authority of undivided deity, the Trinity, to and in the evolving universes. Such a paradise union of the primal sevenfold expression of deity does actually embrace, literally encompass, all of every attribute and attitude of the 3 eternal deities in supremacy and in ultimacy. To all practical intents and purposes, the 7 master spirits do, then and there, encompass the functional domain of the supreme ultimate to and in the master universe.
Okay, again, they haven't formally introduced us yet. See, again, they're referring to this from an individuality viewpoint. You've got the 7, and they have something in common. So there's a superadditive consequence of the relationship, the sevenfold relationship, that, again, they're pointing to. It's a superadditive. If each of the individuals have both supreme and ultimate, if it goes above that, it has to bring in the supreme ultimate. So this eighth fact, see, does have supreme ultimate. And notice how the supreme ultimate, not just in the master universe, but that last sentence, see, to and in the master universe. From the outside to it, yeah. See, right. It's an aspect, see, that's transcending that master, you know, it's going to the cosmos infinite. It's going to the co-absolute stuff. Okay. Supreme ultimate personality activity is engaging the co-absolute. So that fact that's associated with the 7 master spirits does get up to the supreme ultimate, parallel to those trinitized secrets of supremacy. Okay. We'll talk about, like I said, we'll talk about that more when they get to the details more. But notice what they said. See, so they gather together and they can have this very direct manifestation on paradise there of this supreme ultimate nature. And what does it say? It's representative of the functional power, wisdom, and authority of undivided deity, the Trinity. See, like I said, that eighth fact is very closely associated with the Trinity. Much more so than the 7 master spirits themselves, which we were just talking about, have this separateness. Okay, but the superadditive consequence is very much tied to the Trinity. You know, and so... You know, that brings in all sorts of interesting thoughts about, well, things that are really close to the Trinity, you know, we start talking about mother things and stuff like that. But so you begin to wonder about exactly, well, what does this fact up to? This eighth fact. Okay, so that's but you know, you might have been wondering, is if you were following that whole bit about the eternals of days and all that, you know, it's like, well, it seemed like it was kind of lopsided. The one side went all the way up to the supreme ultimate. When we were talking about the master spirits, it only went up to ultimate. Well, see, now you have a level picture. You've got all 3 on both sides, supreme, ultimate, you know, just up to ultimate, just up to supreme, you know, and likewise on the other side. So there's this complex group of beings, see, that are sort of mapping out this whole space. And notice there's this common foundation of the Ancients of Days here on both the God side and on the Trinity origin being side. So it's kind of where those two facts come together as one. And that's, see, when you just start noticing little details like that, the Ancients of Days, it's like, well, I wasn't originally thinking that they had a lot to do with stuff. You know, like Pam was, you know, saying, you know, who do they create? What do they do? You know what I'm saying? If you start thinking about it a little bit more, you go, wow, actually, it seems like the Ancients of Days may have some really key roles to play. Yeah, see, that's when you start trying to use, when you start using the revelation. As you start working it out, you discover, oh my goodness, the Ancients of Days are actually really key to a lot of this stuff. I didn't realize that with just what they gave me as an initial starting point. When you start going down the path a little bit with the revelation, you start to appreciate more how the Ancients of Days fit in, how central a role they play in some aspects of the picture. They're linchpins in a number of ways. Very distinct focal points in the whole big picture that you just don't initially appreciate at all.
As far as we can discern, the seven spirits are associated with the divine activities of the three eternal persons of deity. We detect no evidence of direct association with the functioning presences of the three eternal phases of the Absolute. When associated, the master spirits represent the paradise deities in what may be roughly conceived as the finite domain of action. It might embrace much that is ultimate, but not absolute.
Again, stressing, sub-absolute. You know, even when you're talking supreme ultimate, that's not absolute. Okay, and this, they're bringing in the individuality viewpoint there a little bit. You know, if you're trying to understand it from the seven absolutes of infinity, okay, well, they're the seven master spirits of paradise. That was the very first thing they said, the very first sentence. Okay, so there's the Isle of Paradise is part of this picture. That's where they're headquartered. And we're certainly talking about the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit. So there's four of the seven absolutes of infinity, and they're just saying, you know, you may have noticed we haven't talked about the unqualified absolute, the universal absolute, or the deity absolute, because that isn't really something that is, you know, in play in any immediate way. That's, you know, that the three eternal phases of the absolute comment in there. Now, of course, you know, what would happen if you flip things around to the deity viewpoint, you know, the unity viewpoint instead of the individuality? That's another story, but just in terms of understanding. So you have these seven beings, just kind of wrap it up here. You have these seven beings in and of themselves. They have a distinctiveness from the Paradise Trinity. So not surprising, the first beings they're going to create are these mother beings that do have a really close connection to the Paradise Trinity, the reflective mother spirits, because they're lacking in that area. They do have this super additive consequence that does have a little bit more similarity to the Trinity. And I wonder if that has something to do with bringing creative mother spirits into play. So you can start to see some potential speculation there. And then they also, they're just, you want to think of them as just the prime, like they said, the primary personalities of the infinite spirit. So just think of them as you know, just the downstepped expressions of the infinite spirit. The fact that there's Father, Son, Spirit and stuff, that's, you know, don't try to immediately understand it that way. See, think of it more, you have an infinite expression of the infinite spirit that has a certain flavor of deity. And when you think about bringing the third person, you got the Father and the Son making the third person. I mean, just think about the infinite spirit as having it all within him and just doling it out in seven different ways. So that really the Father and the Son aren't directly involved in this picture at all. This is the infinite spirit's gig, okay? This ministry, you know, the ministry being, the infinite spirit. And it's doing it in seven different ways. And it doesn't have to do very immediately with the three absolutes. It's much more of a deity gig than a stuff gig, you know, where you're making matter stuff and mind stuff and spirit stuff out of the reservoirs. Okay, so that's basically what they're getting at. They're just trying to give you some initial sense of, you know, where to put these beings in the picture. What kind of role are they doing? And you really want to challenge yourself to do what I just said, to really start moving away definitively from a worldview where all there is God the Father. You need to have the courage to set God the Father over to the side here for the moment. And if you're going to try to say, well, somehow these must be the agents of the Universal Father, and I'm going to understand them that way. You're going to have not less distortion of meaning. You're going to have more distortion of meaning. You have to be willing to let this just be the infinite spirits doing. And you're going to have to bring in complexity, because it's not just directly the infinite spirits doing. It's going to downstep and the seven flavors happen. And you have to go apart from the Father, even apart from the Son, see? Sort of the next thing that you always want to have in play somehow, or it starts to feel kind of lonely and scary. It's like, well, I don't want to put both the Father and the Son off to the side. Well, you need to. It's okay. The Infinite Spirit will take care of you. And let's think about what the Infinite Spirit is going to do here more directly. And we're going to, not only as we go forward, really talk a lot about what the Infinite Spirit is doing, but the Trinity. An awful lot of what we're going to talk about, the Father and the Son are not really in play. It's the Infinite Spirit and the Trinity. It's the other two of the four. Sort of the forgotten pair, okay, that are really the action of what's going on. When you ask the question, well, what's going on in the universe of universes? What's going on is a lot about what the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity are up to. Not so much the Father and the Son. And that's a really a challenging difference of viewpoint compared to kind of the history of trying to understand things. I just wanted to emphasize that here. Because you guys know, who've read the book, you know what we're heading into here. Just being after being after being, and just, you're having a hard time with your father-son viewpoint.
It's filling in this mother space.
Yeah.
It's filling in that mother space.
It is.
It's just.
Yeah. Is the word son a male or a female word? Yeah. Okay, see, we're the father-son, we're setting that to the side. We're bringing in mother, and of course, if you just say infinite spirit, that's not even the conjoint actor. That's not even thinking about the third source and center as a person, but as a non-personal aspect, which is going to have a more immediate relationship to the non-personal Paradise Trinity. See? We're really putting personalities in a lot of ways a little bit immediate out of the picture, and we're thinking about deity. Yes. Okay. Deity.
Like functions have a place. Oh. I just want to, get perspective on this. When you say, we got to move beyond just the Father, for those of us who have been percolating for the last 2,000 years in Christianity, and the Father and the Son, mm-hmm. That's who you're addressing. Yeah. For cultures that we live with and impinge on us today that don't even have a concept of a Father God yet, yeah. We can't be talking about this stuff with them.
Right, this is jumping way ahead of the game. Yeah. They need to be initiated first by the fourth epical revelation.
Exactly.
Which is not part four of the Urantia book either.
Yeah. Right.
You know. Right, it's Jesus of Nazareth, you know, and his faith living in an individual, not read from a book. That's the fourth epical revelation, not the life and teachings of Jesus. That's the fifth epical revelation. Jesus is the fourth epical revelation, you know, and someone reveals the good news of the fourth epical revelation when they possess the faith of Jesus and live it. They're revealing the fourth epical revelation. Okay? Part four is the fifth epical revelation, going way beyond the fourth. Okay? I mean, Jesus didn't leave writings. He didn't leave part four. It's not the fourth epical revelation. It's the fifth. Okay? He wrote in sand and ran his hand over it when he was done. Okay, I can run my hand over part four of the book and the words are still there. It's a lot different. It's not the fourth epical revelation. It's not written in sand. It's typeset. Okay, in indelible ink. So it's a very different thing. And it is, as you know, just think about the conversation we just had tonight, or what we were attempting to have a conversation about. Wow. Okay, that, you know, it's pretty complicated. I mean, if you don't even haven't even embraced the good news that God is your spiritual father and all people are your spiritual brothers and sisters, how on earth do you have room for trying to understand all of this stuff? You know, I mean, if anything, like you're saying, it's just going to, it's like, well, this is an abomination, you know, and I think I should burn you at the stake or something. I mean, it's just going to be overwhelming and you're just going to get a negative response. It's way too much. But if you have realized the fourth epical revelation, not just recognized it, but realized it. If you have a core in your being that is the fact that you are a child of a spiritual father, you are something. If you are something, really are something, now do something with it. It's like, well, what? This. As soon as there began to be enough people on the planet, they were saying, well, okay, I am. Now what? Yeah, that's what those are the people that need the fifth epical revelation. If they don't even feel that they are something yet, the last thing they need is this. They need the good news of the fourth epical revelation.
God loves it.
You have a spiritual father who loves you absolutely. Okay? Absolutely independent of all the stupid things you've done. They need that good news. Okay? They don't need, you know, frandalanks and master spirits and whatnot. Okay? But I'm ready to do something with the fact that I am.
Yeah, we want to make stuff happen.
I want to do something.
Turn the crank.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a moment and reflect on that.